Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now you're very welcome back. What makes a pure theatre actor? Well, Marty Ray is a superstar among the regulars who see top class plays in Ireland, of course. He's from Belfast and he adores stories and he's with us now. Good morning, Marty Ray.
How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks a million for coming in. And as I gave people a warning earlier on going, actors in the morning, it's not the forte time of the day, is it? You seem very bright and sparky though.
Well, half our time is the morning time. Rehearsal time, you got to be up and you keep kind of, you know, normal hours. 9, 10 o'clock starts and on until half 5, 6 o'clock. Yeah, and then it changes into the evenings when you're playing the show. So we're constantly swapping. I think it's the swapping all the time that throws us.
It's like shift work. In
yeah, ways, it is a bit, yeah.
Is it the odd existence, actors? I imagine you swan around town.
Swan around, yeah, we swan around all the time in dressing gowns and feather boas and that kind of stuff.
You could carry that off, actually, because...
No, I think it is. I think I'm only reminded that it's a bit odd when, you know, I go home or whatever and, you know, you kind of see your own family who, my family aren't in theatre.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have kind of normal lives. You kind of go, oh, yeah, it goes a bit like that.
What do they do for the various jobs and industries?
My sister works in like a... like a kind of those kind of dentists, you know, those kind of dentist places that do, but it's like cosmetic kind of dentistry and beauty stuff.
Aesthetics, I think they call it now. That's a lovely catch-all term.
Yeah. And she's also a mam, a very busy mam. And my brother's a teacher. So they've got very, you know.
Proper jobs.
Yeah, proper lives and proper jobs. And they're very good at it.
Do you have to adjust then when you talk to the normals?
Do I? Maybe I'm supposed to. I don't know if I do or not.
You're just you. Yeah. And home, you grew up in Belfast.
Well, this is the thing. I grew up in North Armagh in a place called Craigavon.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which was built, I think, in the 60s or something like that. It was very contentious. And it was in between kind of Portadown and Lurg, and it was up near Loch Ney. And I grew up there until I was like 11.
Right,
11 or 12, yeah.
Formative years done.
Yeah, so that was my childhood. It was kind of rural in that way. And
so it was a young town because it's a bizarre place, isn't it? Literally, it's
so
like an invented
place. Plonked in the middle of nowhere kind of a thing. And it was kind of mostly peopled with Belfast people, like that were kind of moved out of Belfast during the height of the Troubles and stuff like that. So I was kind of brought up in this. In my mind, it was kind of idyllic. You know, with these big lakes and the countryside and everything. But my family and lots of aunts and uncles also lived down there. So we kind of would roam around in big groups of cousins having the crack. But all the adults were Belfast people. And then it got to a certain point, I think, where my parents kind of thought it's getting a bit hairy down around about Portadown and the 80s and stuff.
Well, it wasn't very well mixed, was it?
It wasn't very well mixed. No. Well, I mean, the North. But
but especially North Armagh would be very unionist, loyalist.
There was a big element of that there. I suppose as a kid, I wasn't hyper aware of all that.
No.
I think that was also the big shock when we went to, when my parents went back to Belfast with us. I think, it all became very real to me then. Like on the street. And
you certainly know, because you're in West Belfast.
Andersonstown up the top of the Falls Road.
Are we talking kind of late 80s, early 90s?
Early 90s.
Oh, right.
And it was huge changes because, I mean, the primary school I was in Craigavon, for example, was mixed boys and girls and mixed Catholics and Protestants, which was kind of, it was fairly rare.
It was. Pity they didn't do more of that.
I know. And then, but when that was just your bag, like you didn't think of it. So then when we went to Belfast, all of a sudden I was Christian Brothers, all boys, and that was very, very new to me. And then the city was so kind of manic. Mm. So I never know where to say where I'm from. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
both
places. Yeah.
North Armagh and West Belfast.
North Armagh and West
Belfast. What heritage.
I know.
And what did your parents do, or are they still doing it?
My father worked, and he's just retiring this year. But he worked in the fishing industry.
Right.
Yeah. So he loved early mornings.
You never hear much about the any divisions in the fishing industry in the north. Like, there was various shipbuilding, yes, bush yeah. mills and all of that.
Yeah.
But, like, no issues in fishing.
I know. And we lived in North Armagh.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
I was a bit of a drive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, that's what he did. And my mum was at home for while I was small.
Yeah.
And my mum didn't start working. She worked as a dinner lady in the local primary school in Belfast.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Primary school dinner lady.
Yeah.
And you obviously wanted to become an actor. Do you remember when you went?
I don't know that I always wanted to be one. I didn't know that you could be one, I suppose. And it wasn't until I was in secondary school, I had two brilliant teachers. A drama teacher called Marie McCullen and an English teacher called Dermot Camfield. And he was doing Shakespeare with us in English class. So I, you know, you're kind of going, oh, wow, what's this? And then she was doing drama with us from a very early age. Like, she really pushed for it to be a subject that we did from the beginning, from your first year. And then she was kind of making it clear that these plays that you're studying in English class for exams and everything are also something that you can get up and be in.
Yeah.
And I think that was that link was kind of what...
Very good.
Just kind of ignited something in my head. Because I'd always been a big reader.
Were you?
Yeah.
And good teachers can be very discerning watchers. And they can kind of very subtly introduce ideas to...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what happened to you.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was brilliant at enlivening the story for you. You know how when you would do Shakespeare at school, they would make you go round and you would all read a bit out.
Oh, yeah.
As you go around the class and it's just dead. But he would do an awful lot of the reading himself. And
he performed it.
Kind of, yeah.
Very good.
Kind of. And painting the kind of characters for you and all this kind of stuff. It was much more exciting than anything else, I remember. And because of the reading that I was doing on my own, it was big, lots of kind of fantasy, you know, teenage, young teenage stuff, Lord of the Rings and Gormenghast and things like that, that it sounded to me that this Shakespeare stuff sounded like that to me.
Right.
And I was going, oh, this is amazing. I think I can get a job. I think I can be something where I get to be inside this play and we all are in the story. We're all in the story. It was like you disappeared into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like you went through the back of the wardrobe.
Were you a disappearer? You were shy.
I was a bit, I think. Outside the house.
Because when I kind of hear Belfast people, it doesn't feel like a shy place. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's volume,
no,
isn't there? There's volume in that accent.
It's not a shy place, no.
And you need to be kind of loud to be heard.
Mm. Oh, I could be loud. But it's just, I think, outside the house, I was kind of quiet. Maybe that's it. Like when you're not growing up in Belfast, I mean, being around Belfast people, but not actually growing up there and then going there.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
You suddenly go, whoa, because they are.
In the teenage years.
Mm.
What was your relationship like in the class then? Were you seen as the outsider?
I was mercilessly bullied at school.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And you just kind of, it's just one of those things where you just get on with it day after day. Something to be
What
endured.
Were you bullied over? What was that?
Just the kind of... just being kind of quiet and outside. I wasn't into sport.
All right.
And, you know, with the Christian Brothers, it was always about handball and hurling and Gaelic and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't into that. But I was good at the sciences and stuff like that. So I could just kind of bury myself in work. I was very good at school.
I would have thought someone tall like yourself
I know,
would have
yeah.
been fine.
No. Here's the thing, right? 92, Jurassic Park comes out. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the first time I was ever brought to the cinema.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was so amazing.
It's your first trip to the cinema, is Jurassic
yeah,
Park.
Yeah, yeah, it was a long time. Yeah, we didn't really do many things. And I just remember it was life-changing. And it was my favourite thing of all time. But I grew tall quite quickly. So, like, in my second year, I was about, you know, like kind of 13, 14. I'm nearly 6 foot tall. So I looked like a pylon walking up from my dinner. And I remember I must have tripped or something going up in the dinner hall to get the dinner from the hatch. And Belfast people, they saw it. I kind of went, oh, and they started to sing the Jurassic Park theme tune.
the T-Rex.
Yeah, because okay. I'm this big, tall, awkward looking thing. And
can you laugh at it now, or does that trigger? Oh my God.
Does that trigger me?
But no, it does. A terrible.
Yeah, but they turned my favourite thing against me.
Yeah, that's unforgivable.
That was unforgivable.
And you didn't have the performative edge at that stage to kind of just own
no,
it.
I wouldn't have had any confidence like that at that time.
But had you friends then?
Oh yeah, tons of friends and hilarious people. And there were a lot of good, funny enough, a lot of very successful actors came out of that school because of that drama teacher.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because of the teacher?
Yeah, she was brilliant. And so you meet kind of... Oh, yeah, various people.
You meet them on the boards.
Yeah, you meet them at different things and over in the UK and in the north still. And yeah, really good people came out of there.
Yeah, you were quite lucky because you went to RADA, which is the place to go to train in London.
Mm.
How did you get to go there?
Well, I was working for about a year or so in the professional theatre up in the north with a woman called Roma Tumulty, who was from a big acting family. Her father would have been Joseph Tumulty, who was a playwright and an actor from the north.
Right.
And she had a theatre company and she'd seen me in a youth theatre production of The Winter's Tale, Shakespeare. And she offered me a part in a professional touring show about Henry Joy McCracken. Yeah,
the thrill of it.
And I was
the north.
Yeah, exactly. And I was a paid informer in it. So my family weren't delighted, but I had one line and I had to keep repeating it. And I went on tour all around Ireland with it and it kind of changed my life. I was 17.
Really? Right.
And I must have been the youngest in that company by about 30 years nearly. I loved it.
Height having its advantage.
Yeah.
At last.
I was finally taller than them all, but younger than them all.
Yeah.
And after a while, I think working with that company, Roma was very... helpful and advised me, going, listen, if you're serious about this, you should train at it. And then she opened up that whole world of...
And you won a scholarship because it's very expensive otherwise.
I think it was 27 grand for 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was just on... Like, that was never going to happen.
Crazy stuff.
That kind of money wasn't lying around.
Does that mean when you come in a scholarship, are you then pitted against... rich kids
in
London?
Yeah, there was a lot. I think every drama school put up two people and the scholarship happened every 2 years. So it was the Lady Rothermere Scholarship Award.
Rothermere of the Daily Mail.
Yeah, that was then. The Evening Standard.
So you would always defend the Daily Mail.
Could you imagine some kid from West Belfast being supported by the Daily Mail?
If they knew.
I know, it was hilarious. But yeah, it was very competitive. And Simon Callow, I remember, was on the panel.
Really?
Yeah. And he had actually, he was a student at Queen's back in the day. So he was chatting away about Belfast and I was like, oh, wow. And
he was a dresser, I think, for Micheál MacLemore at one stage.
I think that's right, yeah.
Simon Callow has seen it all.
Maybe too much.
Yeah, I'd say way too much.
Yeah, all roads lead back to the Gate Theatre. So many famous people started off at the Gate. But that was the competitive scholarship thing. And I really couldn't believe that I got that because it wouldn't have happened.
So you excel there in RADA, do you?
Do I excel? I get through it.
I mean, do you automatically get a job if you come out of RADA?
No, I don't think that's... Okay. I think people do think that that's something, but it's not. I didn't.
We know you had a career. People are already sending messages. I should get on to your career because I'm sorry it's a meandering conversation. But you're just one of those people, Marty.
Yeah, I talk too much.
But no, it's just very interesting and nice to listen to. Marty Ray was brilliant in The Secret Pacemaker as Father Alec Reed, the priest who engineered the peace process. That's in the last year or two, is it?
Well, it was in the last year or two, yeah.
Marty Ray's a superb theatre actor. If he's in it, I'm at it.
So am I.
That's true. So you're there. You do love the theatre primarily.
Yeah.
You don't do a lot of screen. Is that that's a career decision you've made so far?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's I think it got to a point where the work that was coming my way in the theatre was so interesting. That when the screen stuff was coming in, it was never going to be as interesting as, you know, a Shakespeare that's coming in or a Chekhov or big, big stuff that you've spent your training going, eventually I will play these parts. So when they come in and then you get something from screen, you're going, oh, I don't, that's
your dream rather than do the yeah, you're like, sitting around all day on a TV film.
Yeah, kind
set,
of a thing. Okay. Yeah.
You like to be at the work, doing the work.
Yeah, and I make no bones about that. Like, I like to work and I like to work hard. I do like that. I like hard work and getting in and really being given a...
Because the big difference, obviously, is you can just learn enough to get through a scene on screen. They stop and you're gone for the day.
Yeah.
Theater, you have to keep going.
You've got to keep going.
You have to learn an enormous book. Yeah. How do you do that? I'm always fascinated when I see actors.
I know. And like we, actors are always, we're always being very kind of funny about people saying, how do you learn all the lines? Because people do say it. But I suppose it is true. Like, it's a big part of the job. It depends on the writing. Sometimes it goes in very easy. Mm-hmm. As you're rehearsing it and you're up and moving it and everything, like moving around, sometimes the words, they just drop in and they stay because they make sense, I suppose.
Right.
Other times it's a bit harder and you do have to sit down and do a bit of studying. But it's just memory, really. And
that's what you do in your mornings, as you say, rehearse, 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 learning.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of remembering is so...
That's the bit that frightens everyone.
That's a bit that frightens me too.
Because you're going to be on the stage. And completely forget.
And also the old brain kind of, when does it run out? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're always going, is this it? But it's, you know, so it's always about trying to practice remembering.
You are about to embark on another Tom Murphy project. Mm-hmm. Very important to your career, Tom Murphy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big change for me. In 2012, Drew Theatre did it was a cycle of three Tom Murphy plays. Conversations on a Homecoming, Whistle in the Dark and Famine. Three of his big kind of successful plays. And I hadn't worked for Druid before. So it was a big change for me. I was quite nervous about it and I hadn't worked on a Tom Murphy before. So to go straight in, being directed by Gary Hines and with Tom Murphy in the room... Okay. It was a lot of pressure. And I think maybe up until that point, my career I'd been in a lot of evening suits, if you know what I mean.
Lots of period stuff.
Lots of Stoppard and Wild and Coward and lots of kind of restoration comedies. And
you're great in those, by the way.
Well, I really enjoyed them, like I did. And my training was great for that at RADA because they kind of specialise in that stuff. But it was the first kind of break away from that. Mm-hmm. So I was a bit nervous, a bit unsure. And it was such a massive, immersive kind of experience going down to Galway. And I think we were rehearsing for 8 or 9 weeks and then opened it. We went to London. We went to America with them and everything. And it really was, it felt the responsibility of... bringing Tom's work further abroad than just Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, because they're tough plays. I mean, I think Irish people know how good they are, but...
There's a lot of despair, isn't there?
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of despair, but there's a lot of, you know, there's good crack in them too, but
He puts the despair and laughter together.
Yeah, he doesn't pull his punches when he's talking about the country that he's from, and I think maybe that's the bit that... people outside of Ireland don't want to look at. They want to see us all with, you know, a pig under our arms and delighted with ourselves. And you're going to go, do you know what? It's not always like that. So I think Tom is, he really is, he's much more kind of interrogative. Is that the word? Mm. When it comes to what he's writing. And then the language, his use of language, his operatic use of language is, there's no one meets him, really.
What if you could give someone an idea of the type of storytelling that he sort of gave? And he's only dead a couple of years, isn't he, Tom Murphy?
Yeah.
What would you say it is? It is that sort of harsh, not harsh, but honest but harsh look.
He makes you think, and I think. But there is he is brilliantly theatrical and operatic. I think that's he's epic.
So The House, is what you're doing next, and it's in the Town Hall Theatre in Galway. Good place to launch it.
Mm-hmm.
On the 14th of September you begin Town Hall Theatre in Galway and then it goes to the Gaiety for the Dublin Theatre Festival. It's that time of the year already.
I know.
Which will be the end of September into October.
Yeah.
Druid.ie has all the tickets. Marty Ray, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad we mentioned Belfast because you could hardly detect it in the accent. It slips out every now and again.
I know, yeah.
Interrogative was a very good word for
interrogative. Yeah, it's amazing I didn't say flag or anything like that.
I hope you come back to us again because I want to talk about shouty actors and the quiet whispery ones.
But oh, brilliant.
We'll talk about the form another time.
Yeah.
Enjoy the run. That's The House. And Marty Ray, thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break.
Email oliver@rte.ie.